Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, the H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, gives you information, please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information, Please, at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. If we use your question, the H.J. Heinz Company sends you $10 in war stamps, plus a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If we muff the question, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information, Please, is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, the book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman.
From the platform of Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C. As you may know, Information Please has been engaged lately on a bond-selling tour. We interrupt that tour temporarily to do our part in helping the Red Cross campaign, which begins today. This appearance for the Red Cross is contributed by the H.J. Heinz Company and Dan Golenpaul, our producers. And it means, very simply, that every person in this gigantic and filled-to-capacity auditorium has made a personal contribution to the Red Cross tonight. Now, tonight, Information Please, spontaneous and completely unrehearsed as usual, offers as its panel of experts the composer and pianist Oscar Levant, the genial essayist John Kieran, the learned versifier, Franklin P. Adams, and as our guest, the baby congressman from California, the Honorable Will Rogers, Jr. Now, our first question is an off-the-record question, gentlemen. Some time ago, we asked this one, and you muffed it, as is often your pleasant custom. Here's the off-the-record question. Who is the president of the American Red Cross? We have two eager hands. Mr. Levant.
President Roosevelt.
Very good. You have learned something since last time.
I knew that a long time ago.
Maybe you weren't on when we...
I wasn't on.
Oh, that's it.
Mr. Swope rehearsed me in that 4 years ago.
Yes, Franklin Delano Roosevelt is the president of the Red Cross, and, of course, the president of the United States is always the president of the Red Cross. Now, how about this one? This comes from Mrs. Dan E. Edgerton of Portland, Maine. Gentlemen, what would you feed each of these real or fictitious animals? Let's get two out of three. What would you feed Daniel Webster?
The devil.
No, this Daniel Webster is an animal and not a man.
Oh.
Daniel Webster. Mr. Kieran? Mr. No. Rogers? Mr. Rogers, there's a look of intelligence on your face.
Give me a minute.
A minute?
Whiskey.
Pardon?
Whiskey.
No, that's just a pleasant thought that might come to you.
That's the real Webster.
No, Daniel Webster... Daniel Webster was the frog in Mark Twain's story. Oh, all the experts are shaking their heads now in shame. He's the frog in The Jumping Frog of Calaveras County by Mark Twain, and you'd feed him, Mr. Kieran, what?
Well, you wouldn't feed him shot, which the trickster did.
That's right.
You'd feed him flies.
Yes, flies or other insects. You did get that, but a little late, didn't you, Mr. Kieran? How about this one? What would you feed Elsie? Elsie, Mr. Kieran.
I would, Well, I'd give her clover and silage and maybe a grain mash now and then.
Yes, why would you
see the cow.
She's a cow. Belongs to whom?
Well, it used to be a Borden company.
A Borden company.
Yes, I think so. You don't still insist on whiskey, do you, Mr. Rogers?
No.
How about this? Might get milk punch. How about this one? What would you feed Archie? Archie? Mr. Adams.
Type.
Type? I don't get it. Oh, you mean Mr.
Marcus's.
John Marquis's, yeah. Archie.
Yes, Archie the cockroach.
Yeah. You'd feed him type? Why would you feed him type?
Because that's what he ate.
He didn't eat type, did he? Well, you might feed him type, but I should think you'd feed him what if he were a cockroach?
Flies.
Oh, you don't feed cockroaches flies.
If they're big enough.
I don't water know. And stuff that doesn't go down the sink.
I should think you'd feed him cockroach poison.
That's
you?
Not
Not if you wanted him to live.
No, but then you wouldn't want the cockroaches to live ordinarily.
You would Don Marquis's cockroach.
That's right. I think you would feed a cockroach poison. I have to call that wrong. And send $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mrs. Edgerton and a set of the Britannica. How about this one from Blake McElwain of Pensacola, Florida? What's the military significance of each of these symbols? M1. M1. M as in Mary. Mr. Rogers.
M1? I think it's the light tank.
Military intelligence.
No, I think.
I made that up.
Rogers says
it's the
no,
light
right?
tank, I believe.
Apparently not. The Garand rifle, unless I'm mistaken.
Oh.
Is that right?
Right.
You're losing your constituency pretty quickly, Rogers.
That's why a congressman won't appear on the show.
Don't worry, you're doing all right, as compared with what I can imagine other congressmen might do. I'd name them for a trifle. How about G2? Oh, we have three hands. Mr. Adams.
General Staff.
G2, General Staff?
G2 is the General Staff or the intelligence part of the General Staff.
Adams, oh, the intelligence part. Yes, now you're talking.
That's part of the General Staff.
Intelligence Service. What were you going to say, Mr. Curran?
I was going to say that's correct. G is divided into 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, I believe, of which 2 is the intelligence department.
That's what Mr. Adams meant. I'll call
and,
that right.
And you can further subdivide that. G is for General Staff. S is for anything lower than a General Staff with the same numbers.
100%.
I can add to that. GI means a haircut, general inspection.
How about M17? M again, as in Mary, M17.
St. Patrick's Day.
It's a wild guess. M17, Mr. Levant?
Is that a plane?
No.
Well, why did you ask me?
Mr. Rogers?
Well, I'll take another shooting guess at it. I would say it is some type of an armored vehicle.
Well, it's an Army tank destroyer.
No, well, they run from M10 on up, and I don't know how high they've been going.
Well, however they run, they escape you slightly, Mr. Rogers. It's an Army tank destroyer, and that sends another $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mr. McElwain and a set of the Britannic. How about this one from T.J. McGraw of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? Complete the quotation about a name. A quotation in which the phrase "a name" appears. Mr. Rogers?
What's in a name?
Attaboy. Yeah, you got all those voters back, Mr.
A name
Rogers.
Is as good as its bond.
Mr. Kieran, what were you going to say?
Just that.
How does it go on?
A rose.
A name by any other rose.
Name
would
that which we call a rose.
That which we call a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. Mr. Rogers, do you happen to know where that comes from?
Why ask me out of
it's
all these?
Well, I thought if you knew, you might run
it's
for
Shakespeare.
Senator. Mr. Kieran?
Romeo and
Romeo.
Juliet.
Yes, Romeo and Juliet. How about good name? Complete the quotation about good name, Mr. Adams.
Good name in man or woman.
Dear my lord.
Dear my lord.
Yes.
Is the immediate jewel of
their possession.
I think that's right. And there's another quotation. He that filches from me my good name robs me of that which not enriches him,
but makes me poor indeed.
That's the same quotation.
Yes.
Max W. Beth.
How about grand old name? Grand old name. Mr. Adams again.
Mary Izzo.
Mary Izzo. Grand old name, yes. And who's the author of the sentiment, Mr. Adams?
George Michael Cohen.
Right. That gives us 3 out of 3 on that one. How about this one from Arthur Thompson of Orange, New Jersey? This is a question about Washington, our hosts this evening. Can you identify these famous residents of Washington? What Johnson was the pride of Washington, though he never lived at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue?
What was?
In case you don't know what 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is, it's the place in which the Lakers have a 99-year lease. Mr.
Waller Johnson, the pitcher.
Who?
Waller Johnson, the pitcher.
Yes, he was a pitcher for the Senators, quite right, the pride of Washington. How about this? What Coolidge made a lavish gift to the Library of Congress? Mr. Levant again.
That's Mrs. Coolidge, who has done very, very much for music. She endows chamber music and has given gifts to the congressional. She also backs quartets like the Coolidge String Quartet.
Yes, that's
she's
quite
a composer,
right.
Incidentally.
Yes, a distinguished music patron, Elizabeth Sprague Coolidge. And what Hoover spent 42 years in the White House? Mr. Kieran.
Ike Hoover.
Ike.
Who was Ike Hoover?
He was the general factotum down there at the...
I think he was head usher.
Yes, head usher.
Well, he did about everything.
That's right. He wrote a very good book called 42 Years in the White House about the presidents and other dignitaries that he'd associated with. How about this one from Lawrence H. Singer of New York City. This is a musical question, gentlemen. Each of the songs you're going to hear should suggest a familiar date in March. Can you identify the date from the song? Let's get 2 out of 3, and let's have the first. I had Mr. Levant's hand at once. Mr. Levant.
You should have seen me dance that in tights. That's the can-can number.
Yes, I'd just as soon not have seen you.
Well, that applies to today, March 1st, on the can rationing.
That's right. That's a perfect answer. Yeah. What's it from, Mr. Levant?
It's by Offenbach, and it caused a furor with the dandies in Paris. And it's Orpheus, I think.
Yeah. By the way, Mr. Levant, this is the first time I knew that you cared for such pleasant music as that is.
I don't, but it's... you see it in Le Gaite Parisien by Offenbach every year, whether you want, like, the Rhapsody
like
in Blue.
Yeah, I see. And now the second of these snippets of music, please. Give you a...
Is that St. Patrick's Day?
Go ahead.
I'm just guessing. It has an Irish lilt in its eyes. What's the name of
it's
it?
It's a great day for the Irish.
Yeah.
Is that right? Right. Now, how about the next one? Mr. Curran.
That would be March 15th.
Why?
All of me. Why not take all of me?
And now our Heinz reporter has a few pertinent pointers about point rationing that are of interest to all of us. If you please, Ben Grauer.
Many of you folks had a brand new experience today shopping under Uncle Sam's point rationing system. And from now until victory, that's the way you'll be buying most of your favorite prepared foods. So if you'll follow a few simple rules right from the start, you'll find you can save yourself considerable time and trouble. First of all, give your grocer a break. And at the same time, make sure your family gets plenty of nourishment by planning your menus a week in advance. Then make it a habit to add up your ration points before you go to the store. Now that's a mighty easy way to speed up service and avoid the danger of running out of points. In many of today's newspapers, the makers of the 57 varieties publish the Heinz ration budget form for this very purpose of simplifying your food buying. If this handy form appeared in your paper, clip it and fill it in before you do your shopping, or else work out a simple form of your own. The important thing, whether you use the Heinz ration budget form or your own, is to figure out your ration points carefully before you leave for the store. You will be helping yourself as well as your grocer.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer. And now we'll go on with a question from Frederick Roy of Belrose, Long Island. To what persons or places were these firsts applied? And the first phrase is, first to fight. First to fight is applied, Mr. Curran.
United States Marines.
You bet. United States Marines.
Semper Fidelis.
Right. How about this one? First to cry, hold enough. What does that recall to you, Mr. Adams?
And damned be he who first cries, hold enough.
That's quite right. And what's it from?
Macbeth.
Macbeth, yes. Whom was he challenging when he said that? You remember?
Macduff.
Macduff, yes.
Mac W. Duff.
That's the one. Now, how about this one? First in war, first in peace, and last in the American League, Mr. Curran.
That's an old baseball saying, and it was very impolitic of you to bring it up in the city of Washington.
Yes, it is. In fact, I wonder why it's down on the card here. Yes, the Washington Senators, as Mr. Curran has subtly suggested. Well, that gives us 3 firsts out of 3 and sends us on to a question from Lewis C. Moore of Norwood, Ohio. Can you identify these quotations from poetry or song, all of which are concerned with a voyage? The first is, for you sail at break of day. For you sail at break of day. Does that recall anything?
Concerned
to you?
With a what?
For you sail, S-A-I-L, at break of day.
How does the question begin?
Well, identify that quotation. That's about all.
Oh.
Well, it comes from Anchors Away. Drink away, for you sail at break of day are the lines that are familiar to you if you happen to know Anchors Away, Mr. Adams, which you apparently do not. Now, how about the next one? Then down from the skies came the wooden shoe bringing the fisherman home.
Wink and... Oh, excuse me. Did you call on me?
I did indeed.
Wink and blink and a nod.
Yes.
Mr. Rogers, what were you going to say?
I was going to say that.
I'm awfully sorry. I should have called on you. Winkin, Blinkin, and Nod from Mr. Rogers. Who wrote Winkin, Blinkin, and Nod?
James.
Eugene Field.
Now, you were going to say James Whitcomb Riley. When everybody makes that mistake when you're at the beginning. After a while, you begin to separate them. How about this one? I've flown around the world in a plane.
I know that one.
Mr. Levant.
I've flown around, but I can't get started with you.
Don't look at me, Mr. Levant.
That's the song.
Right. I've flown around the world in a plane. I've settled revolutions in Spain, the North Pole. I've charted, but I can't get started with you. Very good. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. How about this one from Eugene Dvorovy of Blue Island, Illinois? If you were in the Army, gentlemen, and heard these bugle calls, what would you do? There are going to be 3 of them. We have to get 2 out of 3. Let's have the first. How about it, Mr.? Yes, Mr. Rogers?
You'd stand at attention.
You do what?
Retreat.
Well, which? How about it? No, I think that's wrong. Mr. Kieran?
Well, you could get ready to go to bed if you wanted, but you wouldn't necessarily have to hurry.
Yes.
That's
what?
A tattoo.
Tattoo, yes. The tattoo is right. You distinguish all lights in your living quarters. It sounded at what time, Mr. Kieran?
Well, in our army, which was a very old-fashioned army, it was sounded at 9 o'clock.
I think the same is still true. It still sounded at 9 p.m. Have to call that wrong. Now, how about the next one? Yes, Mr. Rogers.
Well, there. There you would stand at attention.
What does that mean?
That is, I don't know what you call it, is when they lower the flag.
Yes, that's quite right, Mr. Rogers. It's retreat. You stand at attention. It's the call for the official lowering of the flag. That's absolutely right. And now the third and last.
I don't know the answer, but he plays those bugle calls very well.
He plays them very well.
Well, I'll take a chance. I don't remember that, and I think it's a call that is infrequently played, so it might be pay call.
No.
Rogers,
I know that.
Got another idea?
Oh, you would know pay call. You must have been in a good army.
That isn't a news weekly, is it?
No, it's fatigue. It means it's a call to ordinary post work of shoveling snow or some similar task. Well, I guess we lose $57 in war bonds and stamps, Mr. Dvorovy, and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Ladies and gentlemen, the H.J. Hines Company is surrendering its commercial time tonight so that we may listen to a few words from Private Carl Drake of the Army Air Forces.
Well, Mr. Fetterman, there isn't much of a story. I'm Private Drake of Oklahoma. I served 8 months in the British Isles, and now I'm back here for hospitalization. When we got to Britain, the first people to help us were Red Cross workers. When we got to London on leave and felt strange or lonesome, we went to Red Cross clubs and got bed and breakfast for 4 vets and free tickets to the theaters, sightseeing tours, and everything to keep a fellow from getting homesick. Well, I was wounded. I can't tell you how or when, and I wouldn't be here tonight if it wasn't for Red Cross blood plasma. When I came out of the ether, the first thing I saw was an American Red Cross nurse smiling at me. An American smile. Folks, the Red Cross is our lifeline to home. Don't cut it. Don't weaken it. Make it stronger. We need it, and we can't do without it.
Well, I don't know how much... I was going to say that I don't know how much that American smile was worth to Private Drake. Suppose we figure it at $125 million. Ladies and gentlemen, the rest is up to you. And now we'll go on with a question from Helen Gray Solomon of Nashville, Tennessee. We have to get 2 out of 3 on this one, gentlemen. Identify the soldier of fiction who joined an army after rescuing the woman he loved from a burning city. Mr. Levant.
Gone with the Wind.
Yes.
Rhett Butler.
Rhett Butler is right. Perfect response. How about a soldier who joined an army while on a year's leave from the university where he was an instructor?
Oh.
Mr. Levant again.
Is that Mrs. Garson again?
Who?
Mrs. Minerva. What's her name? Greer Garson.
No.
She was in that.
No. It's understandable that you have her on your mind, but it wasn't Greer Garson. No, it was the hero of Hemingway's For Whom the Bell Tolls. The hero's name was what?
Jordan. Robert
yes.
Jordan.
Very good, Mr. Levant. Robert Jordan. And what side was he on?
He was on the Loyalist side.
Yes, otherwise known as the Spanish side, Mr. Levant. Now, which soldier of fiction joined an army because all his classmates did at the urging of his teacher? Well, this goes
Oh, that's Leslie Howard. Remember that?
No, I don't remember it.
You can't afford pictures, incidentally.
No.
That
you
was the invasion. No, not the invasion.
You can't afford books.
Now, Mr. Levant, how about straightening us out?
Well, that was the story with Leslie Howard, whether you could afford it or not.
But what picture was it?
He was a professor, and they took a tour through Germany around 1939, in the summer of 39.
Well, I don't think that is the answer, though it sounds kind of convincing to me. It's All Quiet on the Western Front. And it's the hero of that book, Paul Baumer. That goes back a couple of years,
well,
even in pictures. And I guess, let's see, that sends $57 to Miss Solomon and War Bonds and Stamps and a set of the Britannica. How about this one from S.J. Schwartz, Jr. of New Orleans, Louisiana? Oh, this is all about ex-congressman, Mr. Rogers. Who was an ex-congressman who was elected president twice? Now, there's a cheerful idea, Mr. Rogers. Mr. Levant, as a matter of fact, there were several. Mr. Adams.
Abraham Lincoln
yes.
was one.
That's quite right, Mr. Adams. Abraham Lincoln, the most famous. And there were two others of lesser fame. Congressmen who were later elected president two times, Mr. Adams.
Andrew Jackson.
I think not.
Theodore Roosevelt?
No, I think not.
McKinley?
Yes, Mr.
McKinley.
Kieran has it right. William McKinley and the other one is James Madison. Now, how about an ex-congressman who conducted the Philharmonic?
Oh.
Mr. Levant?
That's tricky, huh?
I don't know.
That's LaGuardia.
Yes, he did conduct the Philharmonic.
He does it every week with those air raids.
Was it the Firebird music that he conducted, Mr. Levant?
He likes noise, I'll tell you that.
And an ex-congressman, gentlemen, who is now a cabinet member. That should be an easy one. A very distinguished public servant. An ex-congressman who is now a cabinet member. Oh, come, come. Mr. Rogers?
Was Secretary of War Stimson?
I think not. No, I think not. Hull is the right answer.
That's right.
Cordell Hull, our Secretary of State. Well, I guess we did get 2 out of 3 right on that one. How about this one from Mrs. E.C. Turner of New York? Identify the literary or fictitious characters who traveled in the following way. I'll give you the route. The first traveled from Grand Pre to Louisiana to the Ozarks to Michigan to Philadelphia. Mr. Kieran?
Evangeline.
Yes. Whom was Evangeline seeking?
She was seeking Gabriel.
That's right. In
Longfellow's Evangeline.
Yes, 100%. How about this one? Who traveled from Memphis to St. Joe? Mr. Levant?
My mama done told me.
That's the one.
So da-da-da-da-da.
It was really the mama who did the traveling then.
The lyric writer wrote it. Johnny Mercer. He can tell you about
he
it.
He can tell us. How about this one? Who traveled from Paris to Pamplona to Bayonne to San Sebastian to Madrid? Paris to Pamplona to Bayonne to San Sebastian to Madrid.
Where's Bayonne?
Not in New Jersey.
Is that...
Mr. Adams?
Anthony Edwards.
That's just a wild guess, isn't it?
That's just a wild guess.
Is that Archbishop Spellman?
No. No, it's a fictitious character.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Fictitious character, and the answer is Jake, a character in what book?
Jake.
The Sun Also Rises by Hemingway. Mr. Rogers, you had that on the tip of your tongue.
No.
Yes, you did. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. How about this one from A.M. Rosen of Houston, Texas? In which 2 services do you find these equivalent ranks? Lieutenant and captain. They're equivalent in what 2 services? Mr. Kieran?
Well, a lieutenant in the Navy is equivalent to a captain in the Army.
That's exactly right, Mr. Kieran. Now, here are 2 more equivalent ranks. These get harder. Sergeant Major and Master Sergeant. Sergeant Major and Master Sergeant. Mr. Rogers?
The Marines.
Right.
And the Army.
That's exactly right, Mr. Rogers. Good going. Now, how about this? Third Officer and Ensign. This is a tough one. You sure about it, Oscar?
I never was sure of anything in my life. One is the Navy. Let John take the hard part.
Mr.
Third Officer and what?
Third Officer and Ensign.
Well, they're both...
Both in the Navy.
No, not both in the United States Navy.
No.
Let's
stick to our own service, Mr. Adams. Let's stick to our own...
I think the other would be in the Merchant Marine.
Don't think so.
Well, then it might be in the British Navy.
Maybe it's a ball player.
It is the Merchant Marine.
You've got me thoroughly confounded.
Well, what is it?
No, the answer is this. The third officer is an officer in the wax, and that's the same as an ensign in the waves. Get it? Well, I don't see why you 2 people shouldn't know that.
I'm not allowed to see women after dark.
Mr. Rogers, I bet if we had Congressman Luce down here, she would have known it. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. How about this one from Miss May Farley of Campbell, California? Who is the it referred to in these lines? It flooded the crimson twilight like the close of an angel's song. Mr. Adams?
The Lost Chord.
Yes, Lost Chord. It's a very famous poem, and I suppose very few people know who wrote it. Do you, Mr. Adams?
Who wrote the poem?
Yeah.
S. Baring Gould.
I think you're thinking of Onward Christian Soldiers.
I am. Who wrote the poem? Elizabeth Akers Allen or somebody like that.
No, Adelaide A. Proctor.
Adelaide Ann Proctor, yes. And Sullivan wrote the music.
A more useless bit of information has never been vouchsafed on this program, Mr. Adams. Even lazy jellyfish can do it.
What?
Even lazy jellyfish can do it. Mr. Levant?
My mama done told me.
Well, you've got the general idea. The it refers to what?
Dancing.
No. Falling in love. Oh. Falling in love.
Oh, is that Cole Porter?
That's Cole Porter, yes.
Mm-hmm.
How about this one? It will never pass into nothingness. Mr. Kieran?
That is from the Ode on a Grecian Urn by John Keats. It's Endymion. And opening of Endymion.
Yes, how does it go?
Thing of beauty is a joy forever.
Yes, can you give us a line or 2 more?
No, I can't.
It's not so very easy.
It will never pass...
If loveliness increases, it will never pass into nothingness.
Nothingness, but will ever keep a bower and something where
there
we can...
There you are. Play. I knew you knew it. That's right. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Now, the H.J. Hines Company tonight has paid out $228 in war bonds and stamps... and 4 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Mr. Rogers, our best thanks. Next week, the Adams-Levant-Kieran combination will bat out the answers from our New York studios, while our guest, the cinema maestro Gregory Ratoff, answers them from Hollywood through a special hookup, which I couldn't explain even if I understood it. Remember, send your questions and the correct answers to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer, has a word for the grocers of America.
Yes, Mr. Fadiman, I want to invite every grocer to ask his Heinz man for a supply of ration budget forms for his customers. They help you give Mrs. America better, quicker service. And next Monday night, we'll be back again at the very same spot on your dial with another session of Information, Please. Until then, the H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the 57 varieties, bids you good night.